Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening, everyone. Good afternoon in some places. Trisha Griffith here with Blog Talk Radio and Web Sleuth Radio. We're an hour early today because we have a very, very special guest, so I will forego my usual chatter stuff that I do, and we're going to go right to it. We're talking about the Susan Powell case, and on the phone with us, we have local Fox News reporter Ben Winslow, and Ben has a limited amount of time to be with us, and so that's where we're going to go directly to Ben. In just a little bit, we have Kiersey Hellowell on with us, that's Susan's best friend, and later on, Diane Diamond. But right now, let's go to Ben Winslow, and Ben, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule. I know you're just going nuts, and I really appreciate it, and everybody from Web Sleuth appreciate it.
Oh,
and welcome.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Okay, why don't you give us the latest? Now, let me just briefly say, Stephen Powell has been arrested. What are the charges as they stand today?
It is 14 counts of voyeurism and then a count of, basically it's a child pornography-related charge. It's a possession of images for sexual purposes like that. It's one of those types of charges in the second degree. And last we checked, he remains in the Pierce County Jail on $200,000 bail. That's either cash only, according to the judge, or with a surety bond, which means still has to, as I understand it, still has to essentially cough up the $200,000.
Okay. When you say child porn, do you have any more description? Do we know who the kids are? What have you heard?
Well, according to the probable cause statement, these relate to neighbor children that he is accused, and need to stress again, everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law, but that he is accused, according to these charging documents, of surreptitiously photographing people. The neighborhood children, according to the probable cause statement, some were photographed using the restroom, or some were photographed bathing, things like that, that these were improper images, according to the police.
And what does voyeurism mean? I'm a little confused on that. What is that?
Voyeurism means that you're spying on someone.
Right, but how do they know that the pictures that he has taken are considered voyeurism?
Well, because according to the probable cause statement, which I just to kind of let your listeners know, we have posted on our website, fox13now.com, so people can read it themselves. It basically accuses him of using a camera and a telephoto lens and spying on people through a window, from his house to their house and other places, other public places, according to police, using this to basically, again, spy on them and then take these pictures and these video images, of which the prosecutors in Pierce County, Washington, claim there were more than 2,000 images.
Okay, so that is what a creepy. I mean, I know you can't say anything, but I'll say it. He's creepy. He creeps everybody out. He has from the very beginning. Ben, I don't know if you know this, but over a year ago on Web Sleuth, we were talking about the obsession that Stephen Powell had with his daughter-in-law, and discussing all the creepy, weird songs that appeared to be directed to her. What have you heard from the neighbors or anybody else, maybe that hasn't actually been out in the news yet, that you can tell us about this guy? Have you found out anything else that would make everybody go, oh my God, I don't believe it? What's going on in this guy's head?
Nothing that, that hasn't already been reported, really. Neighbors are certainly stunned, especially up in Puyallup, Washington. They're certainly surprised by this. I did speak with Jennifer Graves, who is Stephen Powell's daughter and Josh mm-hmm. Powell's sister. She was not surprised, actually, when I spoke with her. She said that this kind of thing didn't surprise her, and that Susan had complained about this to her, as well as, I know, of course, Kiersey is one of your guests, and I know she's complained about it to her. And this is certainly something that, at least from that quarter, they weren't surprised by this arrest, which I would have to say kind of surprised me.
Mm-hmm. That is surprising that his own daughter wasn't surprised by the arrest. Now, here's the thing that I find interesting, and then we're going to get to the kids because I know you have to go. Stephen Powell has another daughter that is very protective of him and really, really supports him. First of all, what is her name, and what can you tell me about her?
You know, she basically, as I know, she just maintains her support of him. And she's, and unfortunately right now I'm blanking on her name. It's Alia or Aaliyah or something.
That's
like,
it. That's it, right.
Yeah,
it's
and
Alina.
She is...
Alina, thank you, Kirstie.
Alina, excuse me. And, you know, she I know, has been, you know, supportive of him, as has been Josh. And then, you know, and of course they have their theory that they, what they believe happened to Susan. And, you know, we have asked questions about, with all of this, it has raised new questions about Stephen Powell and whether or not he would be considered a person of interest in Susan's disappearance. And Pierce County Sheriff's deputies have referred us to West Valley City Police, and at this point, West Valley City Police certainly are not commenting.
Of course not. We have a lot of questions from our chat room. One from Gwenabob would like to ask you what you think the purpose of the Ely, Nevada trip was.
You know, that is one that we're definitely scratching our heads over. I mean, they certainly, the police said that they wanted to make it clear, and it, there, definitely their actions spoke louder than words on a number of different ways. But they wanted to show everybody that they are not abandoning this case. It seemed like for a long time it had gone cold, at least that was the appearance. And they did this to kind of show everybody, no, it hasn't, we're very actively searching. And by doing that also, it really seemed to show that, at least from my observations, and this is, I spent 3 days out in the desert with them, this is what I observed, it wasn't so much that they were looking for something, is that they were checking things off a list, which, again, leaves us with more questions than we have answers. But it appeared that they would go and they would photograph an abandoned mine just off a road, or they would search the old Ward Mountain mine area. They would search buildings and things like that. They would take photographs, write down some information, maybe a GPS coordinate, maybe something like that, and then move on to the next one. All of that information, we were told, was going back to West Valley City to be analyzed. Now, the police chief also told me that with the latest search out by Topaz Mountain, that some of the things that they gathered from previous searches fed into that. So it seemed to me like, at least from the chief's remarks, it seemed to me like they're circling and narrowing down to something, whatever they believe might help solve the mystery of what happened to Susan Cox Powell.
Got it. Okay. One of our other listeners would like to know, do you know any... Can you describe any of the pictures that were taken of Susan? I know they all had her clothes on, but it has been said that apparently she did not, it's obvious she didn't know her picture was being taken. Can you describe any of the pictures?
You know, I haven't seen them, to be honest, and they're obviously, prosecutors are not talking about that. And prosecutors are saying that the last we heard from prosecutors is that they described them as creepy but not criminal. And so that may or may that. Likely won't play into any kind of prosecution. Again, a lot of the photographs we understand as relate to the charging documents are involving children. So, you know, I know that Jennifer Graves had told us that, you know, Susan had complained that the photographs or that anything that Stephen Powell had done was she described him, according to Jennifer Graves, as a peeping Tom. And that it was when they were in Puyallup, Washington, they were staying there as newlyweds at that home, and they had sheets for walls. And so that was, again, according to her, what she told us.
Okay. And we have one more. Actually, it's not a question, but it's a comment. Supposedly, and I just learned this from Snoopy in our chat room, supposedly Stephen Powell took Susan's panties out of the dirty laundry hamper and had them locked in his cabinet along with her journal. Have you heard that?
Have not heard that, heard anything like that. We did hear initially in the search of the home, the August 25th search, which really led to these charges. I mean, West Valley City Police have said that, you know, it had nothing to do with the disappearance of Susan Powell, but obviously the search warrant kind of led them down the rabbit hole, which led them to this, because West Valley City Police were the ones who notified Pierce County, and West Valley City Police were also there when Stephen Powell was arrested. But, you know, we heard something similar, but again, it's really, without seeing a search warrant return or without seeing anything concrete, you know, at this point, it's just hard to say. We have been told that one of the items that they seized were undergarments, but anything more than that, we just don't know.
Okay, let's talk about the boys. Everybody is absolutely worried sick about those poor boys. Now, there has been talk about, from last I heard, they are with social services. What is the latest? Is there a battle brewing for custody now between Josh and Susan's parents?
Well, yes, there is, really. There is going to be a custody fight because Chuck Cox filed the other day, Friday, I believe, they filed for custody of the children. And it was really interesting, the filing that he made, which he said that he did it in anticipation of Josh Powell being arrested for the disappearance or kidnapping and or murder of Susan. And it was just that just kind of was a wow kind of moment, because it's a very telling statement that he's going so far as to say that. The children are in child protective custody. We understand there is also a hearing this coming week on that very issue.
What do you think? What does your gut tell you? Do you think they're going to go with Grandpa Cox? Let's hope Grandpa and Grandma Cox rather than Josh. What do you know about Washington and how they deal with child protective services?
I really don't know much about it, and they don't pay me for my opinion, so I really can't tell you what
I know.
What
they don't
think.
Pay you for your opinion, but
and
we
so
want your opinion.
Just,
we love your
know.
Opinion.
It's hard to say. It's hard to say. It just depends on what happens in court. Obviously, you have to let the court process do what it does.
Well, I know, but it's very frustrating because, let's face it, it's this big, huge, it's not even a pink elephant in the room. It's a herd of pink elephants. You know, Josh, in my opinion, this is not your opinion, Ben, my opinion, but, you know, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. And, you know, Dad is obviously very twisted. And here you have Josh, number one suspect in the murder of his wife. No way should he be having any of those little kids. Okay, let's see. We have one question here from Lyra. Can someone ask Mr. Wilson if they've tried to get a statement with Stephen's ex-wife, and is it true that one sister who was living with Josh and Dad was married before, and if so, any state? I don't know what that means. Anyway, do you know anything about Stephen's ex-wife and a statement from Stephen's ex-wife?
You know, no one's really heard anything from her, and I think that last I had understood, she really wasn't commenting on any of it at all.
Oh, that's too bad. Okay, well, I know you said you can only stay about 15 minutes, and we're getting close to that 15 minutes, and I don't want to, make you go overtime and cause any problems for you. What can you tell our people on Web Sleuths? I don't know if you're familiar with Web Sleuths, Ben.
I am actually, yes, I do read it.
Good. Well, we are obviously very, very interested in this case, and it keeps taking these wild twists and turns. What can you tell us about the case that maybe we don't know yet, that we're missing? What do you have for us?
Well, I think that it appears that this is what it seems like. It appears that West Valley City Police, of course, are not saying much about their case, but their actions are speaking louder than their words. There's been a lot of movement in this case. And from observation, just from having been out in the desert twice now for extended periods of time, they appear to be moving closer. To what, we don't know, but it appears that there is movement on this case. I know that a lot has been made about whether West Valley, you know, their announcements, there are remains, there aren't remains, or, you know, they're searching. What are they searching for? We don't know. It does appear that there is a purpose to everything that they're doing, and it just seems like things are building. Now, to what, we don't know. Again, it's just one of those things we all have to just kind of sit back and wait and see what happens.
One more quick question. We were all excited when there was that search going on at the mountain and the cadaver dogs hit on something, and it was reported that it was human remains. Found out later it was a piece of wood, a piece of burnt wood. What's the status of that search now? Do you know?
Those pieces of wood are actually being analyzed because the dogs are insistent that there is human remains on there. And these dogs, you know, they are specially trained for this. So what we don't know is what kind of human remains. And it's really the blessing and the curse of these dogs. They can indicate that there is the presence of human remains, but they can't tell you the story or what happened, or what exactly that is, what kind of human remains that is. So we're waiting to see what the forensics tell them about these remains and, you know, whether or not it really is something. And again, this may or may not be related to the disappearance of Susan Powell. Certainly they went out in the desert to look for clues in the disappearance, but there are, as we said at Ely, there are bodies that are found out in the desert, and this is not an uncommon occurrence, unfortunately.
Right.
So, again, the police even caution, don't get your hopes up. And, you know, it may or may not pertain to something. The police certainly, Lieutenant Merritt told me, they believe something may have happened to someone out there. Whether or not it's Susan or somebody else, we just don't know. But, again, they may get more clues as the forensic analysis goes on. And as people on the Web Sleuths Forum know, and as people, you know, who listen to this know, this isn't like TV. This isn't like where Bones and Booth are out there and they've solved the case and they've got an arrest in 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
This takes time. And, you know, the answers to all of this may be a long time away.
Well, that's certainly true. But I'll tell you what, the people on Web Sleuths, we're a patient bunch. We've waited years and years and years before, and we'll wait, and we will keep the case alive.
I've seen the forums. You guys are still tracking cases from years and years ago.
Absolutely. The cold cases, those poor people, everybody's forgot them, but not us. Well, Ben, I'm going to have you back on sometime. And, you know, I'm close by. I live right outside Park City, so... I actually worked at Fox 13 for a little while doing some stuff for the Humane Society years ago. So tell Hope I said hello, and we will get back in touch when you get back into town, and maybe we can have you on for a little bit longer next time, okay?
All right. Take care.
Thanks. Ben Winslow from Fox 13, our local affiliate here, great guy, and really, really is an expert on the disappearance of Susan Powell and what's going on with her father-in-law. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for coming a little bit early today. That was the only time that Ben Winslow could make it, and I felt it was important enough to change the time of the radio show. But right now, if you have a call or a question for Kiersey Helliwell, that is Susan's best friend, feel free to give us a call. The number is 760-825-0933. That's 760-825-0933. And, Kiersey, do you have anything to add or to say about what Ben said?
I can't think of anything right now, but if you bring up specific topics, I'm sure I'll have plenty to say.
Okay. Have you heard the story about the underwear, where he kept some of the LDS Mormon underwear in with a journal locked up? That's supposedly reported, I believe, on theexaminer.com, I think. Don't hold me to that quote. But apparently
yes.
It has been quite – okay, tell me about it.
As far as I know, there is an ex-girlfriend or slash former friend of Steve Powell's, and at first she didn't want her name released, but now it's out there, and Isabel Zender from Examiner.com changed her article to reflect her name, and she said that Steve was in contact with her just a couple of months before Susan disappeared, after not talking to Steve for several years, and during the course of the conversation, he told her all this stuff about Susan, how he was still obsessed with her.
Mm-hmm.
And so she was kind of thinking, okay, that's weird, because I knew he was years before, but I didn't know he still was. And then after Susan disappeared, he contacted her again at least two times, I think. And at some point during that time, but I'm not sure when, he told her that he had a locked cabinet in his bedroom full of his porn stash and Susan's garments from when she had been a newlywed living in his house with Josh. He'd apparently stolen them out of the laundry.
Oh.
And pictures of Susan and all of her journals. And then he was kind of bragging about the fact that when the police searched his home the first time, that they missed all of that.
Oh, man. You know, this guy's mouth is what's going to bring charges and a conviction and going to lead to Susan, in my opinion. His ego is so out of control that he's just going to brag that he got away with something, and that's what's going to be his downfall. Thank goodness he's that dumb and egotistical.
And it's crazy, too, because when Isabel put this article out a few weeks, it was about 5 days before the search of their house 3 weeks ago. She quoted this woman. She talked about the locked cabinet. And I was thinking, now he's going to go get rid of it. The police go in, they're not going to find it. But when they went in 5 days later, I don't know if they found it, but they obviously got the journals, they obviously got the pictures, and so I'm wondering if they got the rest too.
They probably did, and you're right. A normal person would definitely get rid of it, if not throw it away, at least take it out of the house and hide it somewhere. But we're not dealing with a normal person. We're dealing with somebody that, in my professional psychological opinion, because I am a psychologist in my own mind, He seems like a megalomaniac, you know. He can do no wrong. He is never wrong, no matter what anybody else says, and he doesn't care. And I think he's passed some of that on to his son, although his son seems more like a little puppy dog following around sick daddy, you know, trying to do what daddy wants him to do, in my opinion. Okay, we're talking with Susan Powell's friend, one of her best friends, Kiersey Helliwell. And Kiersey's just been wonderful since day one. She's been helping the family. She has gone on all over the media to speak for the family, for the Cox family. That's Susan's maiden name. How are Mr. and Mrs. Cox doing, Kiersey?
Well, I haven't gotten to talk to them very much the last few days because they've just been slammed with media and with the court hearings and everything else. But the last time that I did have a good conversation with Chuck Cox was about a week ago, and he was in pretty good spirits. This was when the search at Topaz Mountain in Utah was going on, and the police had just found the pieces of wood with the human remains on them, whatever those turn out to be. And he just said, I have a feeling that they're getting close, that we're finally going to get some answers, and that this isn't going to drag on much longer. So at that time, he was in pretty good spirits. Now he's probably pretty stressed out and probably really hoping that they're going to be able to get to see their grandchildren. But I know that having the grandchildren out of Josh and Steve's house is something that we're all very, very happy about.
Oh, boy. I mean, talk about a sigh of relief. Now let's just hope and pray that the court system in Washington State has common sense and will not let those two boys go back with Josh. That is, you know, like people were bringing up on Web Sleuths, and I thought this was just the perfect argument. Here's this guy who lives with his father, who talks about having an affair with his wife, who's obviously has child porn, and yet, you know, his son thinks it's okay to have his kids around him. That in itself, take away everything about Susan, that in itself is enough to remove him or to remove those kids from his custody. And they can keep them in Washington State. They can stay with Susan's parents. But the problem is going to be the deprogramming of these kids. And make no mistake about it, they have been programmed. I can guarantee it. With these two monsters, you know, just going at those kids and talking to them nonstop, I can only imagine what they've been through. And it's going to take a lot of love. And that's something that the Cox family has, plenty of love and plenty of patience. And so there's lots of hope for these kids as long as they get them away from Josh. If you would like to call with a question, we would love to hear from you. Our number is area code 760-825-0933. Or if you'd like, you can call in toll free at 877-665-1565. And let me just briefly tell you that Web Sleuths Radio is brought to you by a wonderful organization called DreamCatchersForAbusedChildren.com. This is a nonprofit organization where their mission is to educate the public on child abuse symptoms, interventions, and preventions. Visit them at DreamCatchersForAbusedChildren.com. I didn't have a chance to say that at the beginning because we had to go right to Ben. Okay, we're talking with Kiersey Helliwell. That is Susan Powell's best friend, and lots going on in the Susan Powell case, and I, too, feel that we're getting very, very close. Kimster, are you here with us, my dear?
Yes, I am.
Okay, Kimster, everybody, Kimster's had just a little bit of a stressful day, so let's all give some love to Kimster, tell her we love her, and that we appreciate everything she does. And Kimster, do we have any questions from the chat room?
Yes, I have a question from, actually a two-part question from Gwenabob. She would like to know if Kiersey knows if all the ward members were suspicious of Josh when they were helping him move out of the house. And she also wanted to know if Kiersey saw the living room carpet before it was removed by law enforcement.
Okay, so the first question, yes, everybody in the ward was very suspicious of Josh. They all became suspicious the minute we all heard that Josh was back that Monday evening with the boys and without Susan, and claiming that he did not know where Susan went. We all became suspicious immediately. However, we're taught in our faith to be loving to everybody and to help people out. So that's one reason that people helped Josh move. Another reason, at least for me personally, was that I wanted to make sure that Susan's things were taken care of in the right way and not just thrown in boxes or thrown in the garbage or anything like that. And I really wanted to see how Josh was treating her things and what kind of things he was saying. So I, he asked me to go in the kitchen and pack up his dishes, and I said, actually, could I pack up Susan's things in your bedroom? And he said, okay, if you feel like you can do that. So I went in the closet, and I packed up all of her clothes, and I packed up the things by the bedside table. And so I was just sitting there in the closet, and it was pretty emotional, and I was crying. And I asked, and when I was done, I asked Josh if I could please keep her clothes at my house so that he didn't have to take them out there, because why would he need them if she was gone? And it would save him some space. And he said, no, 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 I'll take those. I might need them at some point, like, you know, if she comes back or something like that. So that was a lot of the reasoning, was we want to make sure that her things are taken care of. And another reason that I personally had, and some of the others may have also, is that we felt like if we remained Josh's friend, that maybe he would feel like he could trust us, and maybe he would let something slip or say something that would help us figure out where Susan was. So those were my reasons, and a lot of the other ward members felt the same way, I'm sure.
And I would like to jump in here. I am not Mormon, but I've lived here my whole life, and it really bothers me when people trash the Mormon religion, especially during this case when people were all angry at the ward members for helping Stephen. That's how the LDS...
Josh.
That's how the LDS religion is. He needed help. They love everybody. I am not LDS, but it was the Mormon church that came and helped our family when my mother died. They didn't want anything in return. They're just here to help. You could not ask for better neighbors, and it's just they do. It's all about love and helping thy neighbor, and, like you said, staying close to Josh, trying to make sure that Susan's clothes and Susan's items were taken care of, and maybe if Josh thought you were his friend, he might open up. So it's a true two-pronged thing there. But you will always find the Mormons, at least here in my area in Salt Lake City, the first ones to be right on the front line if somebody needs help. So that was, to me, it was all a good thing, and some people tried to turn it into something ugly when it really wasn't at all. So, oh, boy.
And can you remind me the second part of the question?
What was the second part of the question, Kimster? Oh, the rug.
Did you see the carpet?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, I was not allowed in the house while the police were doing all their search warrants and everything else, and I did not see or talk to Josh the first 4 days after Susan disappeared. He stayed away from everyone. He wouldn't come and talk to anybody. Well, besides, I guess he saw Tim Peterson on Wednesday night, and Tim gave him a ride to the police station to pick up his van. But he didn't come around anybody until Thursday night, which is when we had the first candlelight vigil, and he showed up about towards the end of that, and he was kind of avoiding my husband and me, but we just went over and were talking to him, and once again, I had all these suspicions in my mind, but I told myself I have a choice. I can ignore him and shun him like my instincts are telling me to, or I can be his friend and see if he'll tell me something. And I was so desperate to find Susan that I chose the second choice, even though it was a lot harder. So we befriended him. We invited him to come over for hot chocolate, and we were very worried about his boys because they were sitting in the cold, freezing van with the doors open, shivering with no hats, no gloves, no scarves, the coat on, and I don't think they were even done up. And they were very hungry, too. They were scrounging in the van.
What did he say about them? I mean, what did he say? Did he say, can you help us with our boys, or what?
No, he was just kind of standing there, not really talking a whole lot, and we were like, come on over, Josh, come over, chocolate, and for 20 minutes, he agreed. And we were really sad because we kept hoping, because it's the first time we've seen him since Susan disappeared. Maybe he's going to say something. Maybe he's going to open up. Maybe if he feels like he has friends still, he'll talk. And so mm-hmm. he came over, and he didn't really say anything at all. And that was just so opposite of the Josh we had ever known, who would blast his opinions at you at the top of his voice for hours on end and never let you get a word in edgewise. And he was just so quiet.
When you say that, let's take a little moment here and kind of get into Josh's head. Was he obnoxious that way? Was he like, my way or the highway, my opinion is the right opinion?
Exactly. That is so how he was. He would get in these little obsessions. Well, I would say little. They were huge for him. When he first moved here, it was all about fixing their house and putting in sprinklers, and he talked about nothing but that for about the first 4 months, and it was so annoying, and we got so sick of hearing about it. And you try to turn the conversation to something else, and he'd always bring it back to that and how he was so great because he was putting in this amazing sprinkler system, and really it was Susan who was doing most of the work. But he would brag about it. And then it was on to he's becoming a realtor, so that's all he wanted to talk about. And then it was he was decided to try computer programming, and he asked my husband to teach him how to be a computer programmer because he knew nothing about it. And then after that, it was politics, and it just wouldn't let you talk about anything else. And it just got to the point the last year before Susan disappeared where we didn't even want him around because we got so tired of it.
What was his political view?
He was very much in support of the Democrats and President Obama, and to the point where he had quit coming to church. But he came to church one Sunday with his van plastered in political signs and parked it in the parking lot and stood in the hall talking to people. And he said that the only reason he came was just so that there was one Mormon in the parking lot that was a Democrat.
I'm a Democrat, and that really bums me out.
There's plenty of LDS people that are Democrats, and there's nothing wrong with
that.
But I was just like, seriously, that's why you came to church? Not to be with your wife, begged you to come, not to help take care of your kids and show them a good example, but to do this? So he was very into that, but it got really weird. And he would say stuff like, well, the U.S. economy is totally failing, and so, Susan, we need to move to a huge freshwater lake and live on the edge of that so we'll have some water.
Oh,
just
boy.
Weird, bizarre things. And she
that,
would ask
yeah.
him, please go to a psychologist or a psychiatrist and see if he could get tested for bipolar disorder because his brother has it really badly and has to be medicated. And she thought that maybe he had some similar mental issues from the way he was acting and his mood swings and his behavior, and he would just refuse and tell her, no, no, no. If I did that and my clients found out about it, my real estate clients, they wouldn't go with me as their realtor, so I'm not going to.
Oh, boy. You're really offering a very interesting insight into this man. Very scary. One question here. What in the hell did Susan see in this guy?
I really wish I knew. I didn't know her at the time. I know she was very young. She was fresh out of high school. She probably was fairly immature. And I don't know if knowing that he's 6 years older and in her eyes maybe he looked established because he had an apartment and he had a job. I really don't know what she saw in him. But I've from friends of his in Washington since then that they were very creeped out by Josh from the beginning. They didn't like him at all. And they tried to tell her that it wasn't a good idea, but she was kind of in the I'm going to do what I want to do kind of stage and married him anyway.
Right. Well, and, you know, everybody's like that. And he was what she wanted in her life. And like you said, he seemed probably stable. He was LDS. I mean, there were certain criteria that he met. And it's true. You're blinded by love. I mean, it's happened to everybody. Unfortunately, in this case, it's pretty scary. Let's see. We do have a question. Did Josh take a polygraph? I don't know if he did or not. Have you heard?
I have always heard that he would never take one. I think the police asked him and he refused. I don't know that for sure because I can't remember if the police said that. But as far as I know, he's never taken one.
What do you think was on the rug? Before you answer that, let me just remind everybody, when the police went to search the house, there were fans all over the carpet pointed to an area of the rug that was wet. This was right after Susan went missing. What do you think was on that rug?
My guess is that, I hate to say this, but if he killed Susan in that house, I don't know if he did or not, but if he did, then maybe some kind of bodily fluid. I kind of doubt that it was blood because I know that the police took a very large section of the carpet. I did see it after the carpet was taken. I didn't see it beforehand, but I saw it after. And it was a pretty big section. And I also know that they took one of the love seats. Or the love seat, not the big couch, but the love seat, yes. So
Go ahead.
But it seems to me that if it was a huge amount of blood, then there would have been enough to prove that a person had died and that he probably would have been arrested.
Exactly, and that's what I've always said. If there had been blood there, we would have had an arrest, and I do think it. I think you're absolutely right, and I think that's what a lot of people believe, is that it was, unfortunately, bodily fluids of some sort. Let me just go to our Web Sleuths poll. This week we have a poll, and I'll discuss last week's poll here in just a little bit. But this week our poll question is, let me find it. Where did it go? Okay, where the heck did it go? Anyway, the Web Sleuths poll this week is, Susan Powell, did her father-in-law have anything to do with her disappearance? That's one of the options. Or does her father-in-law know something about the disappearance, or I don't know? So you can take your choice. okay? Go to websleuths.com, look at the poll forum, and you can find out our latest WebSleuths poll. Do you believe that Stephen Powell knows what happened to Susan, was involved, or you don't know? We'd love you to take the poll, and then we'll report the answers next week. And let's see, Kimster, let's go to Kimster. Kimster, do you have any more questions from the chat room?
Yes, I do. I have a lot, actually. So
go for it.
Thank you, guys, for asking a lot. Anne in Texas would like to know if cadaver dogs have ever been in the home.
I don't know that for sure. I have a feeling that they have because the police have shown that they're very, very thorough, and I find it hard to believe that they would not have brought dogs in there. But I don't know that for sure. They haven't shared that with us.
Okay. I also have a question. I'm going to throw another one in here on you, Tricia, from Lyra 213. She'd like to know if Josh tried to keep the boys away from anyone, and I think this she was talking about prior to them moving to Washington. And the second question, did Josh have daily telephone conversations with his dad at that time?
We don't know if he had conversations with his dad. We do know that he spoke with his dad for 15 minutes on Sunday, December 6th. He told Susan, "I'm calling my dad to get a pancake recipe." Now, that is so suspicious to me because he knows how to use the internet very well. Why would he need to call his dad for a pancake recipe? So you can think about that. But I do know that he talked to his dad more and more and more often in the months leading up to Susan's disappearance. And every time he would talk to him, he would get off the phone hours later and be very angry, very combatant towards Susan, putting her down. And she would tell him, "Josh, your dad's trying to drive a wedge between us because he wants me for himself. Don't let him do it."
Oh, my God. I'm sorry. I have never heard that. Repeat that one more time because I'm just stunned. Josh would talk to his father for hours, get off the phone, treat Susan poorly and be angry toward her, and Susan would say what?
She would say, "Josh, your dad is trying to drive a wedge between us. He wants to break us up because he thinks that if I'm free, then he can have me for himself."
Oh, my God. I don't
and
even know.
And he, of course,
stunned.
Wouldn't listen to her. They moved to Utah to get mostly to get away from him, and she was hoping to pull Josh away from his dad's influence. And as time went on, he got more and more and more sucked back into it. And in answer to the first question, he did prevent the boys from pretty much everybody, and including their daycare provider, Debbie Caldwell. And they were so close to Debbie. They called her Nana. They thought of her like a grandmother. And she knew very well that Charlie would talk to her, and he knew that too. And so he would not let the boys go back to daycare that first week. And on Thursday at the candlelight vigil, Charlie came up to Debbie and started talking to her. Josh immediately ran up to her and grabbed Charlie away and said, "We're not coming back to your daycare." And then that was the last she was allowed to see them.
Do you know how that can damage a young child to be yanked from somebody that they know and love? That's a horrible thing to do. But then, of course, Josh has never had their best interest at heart, as we know.
No, and he was trying to turn them against Susan, too, because a couple of weeks before Susan disappeared, Charlie was sitting, he's the oldest boy, he was sitting in Debbie's kitchen eating lunch or something, and he said, "Nana, my daddy said my mommy's mean." And she said, why would your daddy say your mommy's mean, Charlie?" And he said, "Because she goes to church." He said, "She's mean because she goes to church." And she said, "Charlie, I go to church. Am I mean?" And she could just see him thinking and the little wheels turning in his brain. And she saw so many instances before Susan disappeared of Josh trying to undermine Susan's authority. Susan would beg him to please put the boys to bed because she was busy doing someone's hair. And finally at 10 or 10:30 at night, she would stop what she was doing, go put him to bed. He would go in, immediately get them up and say, "Mommy's so mean, she put you guys to bed. Get up and play with Daddy now."
Oh, my. I know I keep saying this, but I'm stunned. I have not heard any of this, and I think our listeners are probably having the same reaction I am. I need a spatula to pick my job off the ground. What a scumbag. I am just furious with this guy. We do have a question from the chat room. Ann in Texas asking some great questions today. Do you know, Kiersey, we're talking with Kiersey Hellowell. She is Susan Powell's best friend. Do you know if somebody trained to interview children with the police, did anybody talk to the children, a specialist? Do you have any idea?
Yes, they have, and I can't say any more about that, but they have.
Okay, no problem. We totally understand. Kimster, let's go to Miss Kimster. Kimster, are you feeling better? Are you getting a little...
Yeah, just wake me up once in a while, and I'm
we'll
here.
We'll wake you up here. Kimster, do we have any more questions from the chat room? I haven't been following because my jaw is, I'm tripping over my jaw. I'm just so stunned at these revelations.
I know. I might have missed a couple of questions in some of this, too. Thank you very much for letting us know. These are a lot of these questions, Kiersey, I've been seeing on the Susan Powell forum. You know, WebSleuths has a forum dedicated to Susan, and they're finally getting answered today. And so it's very interesting, and I really appreciate you answering them for us. Snoopy Sleuth has asked a question. Snoopy Sleuth would like to know where Stephen Powell was during those days that Susan went missing.
That is a question that I have had from the very beginning, and I wish I knew the answer. I did finally see that the Salt Lake Tribune asked the West Valley Police that about 2 or 3 weeks ago in an article, and they said, we know where he was, but we're not going to share that with the public right now.
Interesting. Do you know if luminol was used in Susan's home at all after she went missing? You know, that's the stuff they used to try and see if there was blood anywhere.
I have no idea, but I'm sure it probably was.
Okay. Kimster, do we have any other questions from the chat room? Well, I got to take a drink of my Diet Coke here. My heart is just racing. I'm so furious at this stuff. You got to take over for a second so I can calm down, okay?
Okay. Kiersey, there's been a lot of things said on the Internet, and I have to remember from the top of my head, but I'm pretty sure it came from Stephen Powell or Josh Powell or both about another missing gentleman named Stephen Kocher. And I wanted to know, one of our guests or one of our people in the chat room asked about that, and I didn't catch the name, but they wanted to know if you knew anything about that how that they were trying to parallel the disappearance of him and Susan and what you thought about that.
Well, obviously, I've read Josh and Steve's website, SusanPowell.org, where they have their lovely nine-page PDF document that they supposedly sent the FBI paralleling their disappearance. And Stephen was from Utah, and he's LDS, and he's young, so obviously they must have run off together. So, yeah, I know what all that I've read of all their stuff and everything they've said, and I just laugh because they don't know. I mean, they obviously are totally, well, I shouldn't call them liars, but let's just say that they're looking very suspicious and trying to put blame on Susan, who has done nothing wrong and who is the victim here, because she would die rather than leave her boys. And I can tell you that with 100% honesty, she would never, ever leave her boys.
I'll call them liars, and they're sick, disgusting, twisted people who I hope that are put away for a long time, in my opinion, so there. Here's another question. Josh was a real estate agent. Did he ever sell a house? Did he ever sell one house?
I think he did sell a couple of houses, but he certainly was not very successful as a realtor. And he actually made Susan become a realtor also. She had to take the realtor test because he was hearing about all these husband and wife teams and how they did so much better. He probably knew that Susan was such a personable, friendly person that he'd have more success if she was also selling houses. She never really did that because she was working so hard at her stockbroker job to support them. But I don't think he sold any more than maybe five, probably less.
I can see him demanding that she take the test. She sells all the houses, and he takes all the credit. I can just see his mind working that way. There is absolutely no question. Okay, Kimster, do we have any other questions here? I've got a few more, but I just wanted to make sure I'm not missing anybody in the chat room.
Well, I kind of have a big one.
Go, we're ready.
Lyra213 asked this a little while ago. I kind of was saving it for later. But, Kiersey, she wants to know if you noticed anything in hindsight that might give you pause today that you might not have noticed at first.
Well, one big thing that stands out to me was Susan was sick for about 3 weeks before she disappeared. And she was usually a pretty healthy person. She worked out a lot. She was really into healthy stuff and vitamins and eating well. And have her sick for that long was really surprising. And I was going through a lot of personal stuff with my extended family at the time, so I wasn't around her a whole lot except at church. But every time I saw her, I'd say, are you better yet? No, I'm still sick, and I'm feeling sick to my stomach, and I've got an earache. And then she kind of laughed, and she said, but I'm not pregnant, just so you know. And I said, I didn't ask because I didn't want to pry or anything, but because I knew she wanted to have more kids. So I guess she went to a doctor, and the doctor gave her some antibiotics. But afterwards, I was thinking, you know, that whole Sunday thing with Giovanna coming over and Josh making pancakes for 4 hours, and supposedly calling his dad for a recipe and serving them their plates individually instead of laying everything out and saying, help yourselves, guys. He brought them their plates individually, all made up. And I just thought, you know, I wonder, I'm not accusing anybody of anything, but her being sick for so long and then him making the food like that, which he normally doesn't ever cook for her, he doesn't wait on her, he doesn't take care of her, that just seems really odd to me and really suspicious.
Oh, my God. I mean, I just have these horrible visions going through my head right now of what he did. I, you know, if this were a script and not real life, what you would say is the dad finally, two things could have happened. The dad pushed Josh to kill Susan, or Josh killed Susan so his dad couldn't have her. You know, somehow, though, I believe that Stephen Powell, Josh's father, is directly in this whole, whatever it is, whether he knew about it or not. I think he knows now. In fact, I have no doubt he knows now what happened. But somehow he was a driving force in some way as to what happened with Susan. Is that your feeling too, Kiersey, or am I off my rocker here?
Shall I give you my official answer?
Well, no, you know,
I really haven't ever shared my private personal feelings because Susan's dad has asked me many, many times to please don't ever accuse anybody of anything.
Then we don't
want to get in legal trouble, and we don't want to stoop to their level and throw accusations and mud around.
Well,
Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
I know that I read Web Sleuths a lot, and I think you guys are totally awesome, and I think you're so smart and so intelligent and have come up with so many great things and dug up so much information. But I know that I wrote a blog post on my personal blog in the very beginning that was discussed a lot on Web Sleuths, and I basically said something to the effect of there's a lot of things people don't know about in regards to this case that have been shared with police but are not public knowledge yet. One of those things was that Steve is obsessed with Susan. And so when we decided to release that information last month because Steve would not quit with trying to release her journals, her private journals, and publish those, we felt that the world needed to know what his motivation was. Now, I'm not accusing anybody of anything, but I think that his actions are very suspicious, and that's why I said in the beginning that I did not know if she was dead, but maybe she was kidnapped. Now, I'm not going to say who I think kidnapped her, but you can probably read between the lines. But it's been so long now that I don't really have that hope anymore. So I'm not going to say what I think happened, but I think that Josh and Steve have done themselves no favors. They've shot themselves in the foot. Every time they open their mouths, it gets worse for them, and they really haven't done anything to look innocent in the public's eye.
Exactly. And, you know, I'll say it for you, and I think that just shows the class that the Cox family has. And I'll tell you what, if I were in their position, I would not hold back. I would be a lunatic. But again, that just shows the love and compassion that Mr. and Mrs. Cox has for everyone. But let's face it, I mean, after Elizabeth Smart, I say, you know, anything is possible until you've proven that it didn't happen. I never would have believed Elizabeth Smart was alive. I would have said you were crazy. But he was so obsessed with Susan. How outrageous is it really to think that he could kidnap her and keep her alive? Now, I don't think that she is alive now, but I think that is an absolutely real scenario that should be looked at and looked into deeply, and I'm sure they already have. I don't see that being absolutely impossible. I really don't. Kimster, do we have any other questions? I'm just so I'm so into this, I haven't even looked at the chat room yet.
Okay, yes. V. LeGay is wondering, why did Stephen have her journal? I'm guessing that she's probably wondering if maybe when you were helping pack things up, maybe you didn't come across it or something. But anyway, she wanted to know if you knew why Stephen had Susan's journal.
Because I didn't pack her journals. They were in boxes in the basement. But I know that Jennifer Graves, Josh's sister, she came over later after I left and was helping do some more packs. She did try to take her journals and say, I want to save these for the Cox family and her photo albums. And there was a big to-do over that. And Josh said, absolutely not. And later on his website, he accused her of trying to steal his property because it belonged to him now that Susan was gone. He would not let her take them. he would not let her give them to the Coxes, and so they went back with him, and that's how his father got them, and according to Steve's former friend, locked them in a cabinet in his room. So she tried and was not able to get them. And another thing that makes me so furious was that Judy Cox, Susan's mother, for Susan's birthday on October 16th, 2 months before she disappeared, she had spent a long time making Susan a beautiful scrapbook photo album of all of Susan's years from baby to adulthood. And she put in almost all of her pictures of Susan that she had, and she gave it to Susan as a nice memento of her life. And so they asked if they could please have that back, and Josh refused. He said no. And they said, Josh, you have thousands of pictures of Susan. Can we please have this back? Judy made it for Susan, and now she's gone. And it might be all she ever has. And they said, no, we might want to look at it sometime. No, you can't have it.
There's a special place in hell for this bastard, pardon me, but there really is. Kiersey, I just want to tell you that we're getting a lot of people on the chat room wanting to tell you thank you and God bless you for being such a good friend to Susan. Everybody is so grateful that you are her voice, because she certainly needs to be heard. And we could all certainly use a friend in our lives like Kiersey Hallowell. Thank you so much. Kiersey, also another question. Do you know if Susan asked for a divorce from Josh, or did she hint that she wanted a divorce?
She talked about it many times with him and with me. And in the summer of 2008, I would say that's probably the worst time. It was about a year and a half before she disappeared. That was probably the worst time in their marriage. He was so controlling. He wouldn't even let her buy groceries anymore. He was making her feed the kids vegetables and fruit out of their garden and off their fruit trees. And he was taking all her money. It was direct deposited into their account, and he wouldn't let her have any of it. And so I started talking to her, and I said, this is wrong. It snuck up on you so gradually that you do not realize how tight his control has gotten. You need to make your own bank account. You need to have your money go into there. You need to do whatever you want with it. You buy food for the kids. He doesn't have the right to it. He didn't work. He didn't earn it. And so she did that, and she went to see a divorce lawyer that summer one time. And she talked to a friend of mine who'd gone through similar problems, and this friend of mine told her, this is a really dangerous situation, and you probably feel like don't feel like you're in physical danger from Josh, but I think you are, even though I don't know either one of you. But she said, well, I want to keep trying. I want to keep making sure that I have done everything I absolutely can to save my marriage before I give up and call it quits. So she was very seriously thinking about divorce, but I don't believe she said to him, I want a divorce. But she has discussed it with him before.
But so he knew. I mean, the writing was on the wall there, and that's when he became more controlling. And, you know, they say that that is the most dangerous time for a woman in a situation like Susan's, is when she's trying to leave, because that is when the man becomes so controlling that he kills her. Let's see. Was Josh out of work frequently? Did he change jobs a lot?
Well, he didn't have a job at all until the summer of 2008, and he finally got the job where he worked for a company called Polish. No, that was his website, sorry. I don't remember the name of his company. Oh, it's Aspen, something Aspen Trucking or something like that. Mm-hmm. And he got a computer programming job in summer of 2008, but before that, he was trying to work at realtor stuff, and that didn't really bring in any money at all. And he also did this incredibly stupid thing where he got a $100,000 loan that had to be paid back over, like, 2 years or something like that.
Oh, my gosh.
To push his realtor business for marketing. And when he told us about that, my husband just said, you are an idiot. Why would you do that? Why would you borrow all this money to market yourself when you aren't even selling any houses yet? And he said, oh, well, all I have to do to make the payments each month is to sell two houses. Then I can make the payments. And we're like, you can't count on that. And we asked Susan, why did you let him do this? And she said, I couldn't stop him. And so right after that, and he said, oh, if it doesn't work out, I'll just go bankrupt, no big deal, if I can't pay for it. And so he wasn't earning any money. He didn't have a steady job. This realtor thing wasn't working out. So he got the computer programming job in the summer of 2008. And then he was over at our house almost every night begging my husband to help him learn the code so he could do this project that he had to do by the next day, because he didn't know how to computer program.
Oh, good Lord. We have another question here. Let me get to it. I just lost my train of thought here. Would you do me a favor? Tell me more about this garden, how he wouldn't let Susan buy groceries, so she had to literally grow her food like she was a pioneer. Is that right?
Well, he was really proud of this garden and bragged to everybody about how great it was and how much he'd done for it, but she was the one out there weeding. And she only had 3 days off a week. She worked 4 days. So she worked Monday, Tuesday, and then she had Wednesday and Thursday off, and then she worked Friday and Saturday. And so it was 10-hour days. And so on her days off, she was out there digging the garden, weeding it, watering it, harvesting stuff, and making bread, because we told her she had to make bread from scratch. And she was thinking, well, this is cool. I'm learning how to be really self-sufficient and self-reliant and whatever. But the boys started to get diarrhea because they were just eating vegetables and fruit, basically.
And
you know, she just gotten sucked into it so gradually, because he wasn't like that when they first moved to Utah. It just happened so gradually.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I keep interrupting.
Oh, I was just
going
to say,
so
that was just when I talked to her so strongly, and I said, you are earning this money. It's yours. It's not his. And if he's not going to let you buy food for your children, you need to put it into a private account, and you go buy whatever groceries you want.
Absolutely.
I mean, he would let her go to the store, but he would say, you have to go through all of the ads. You have to price match everything, and you can buy this at this store, and this thing at this store, and that thing at that store. And
well, you know,
that's how, yeah.
I would have put up with that one day, and, you know, he would have been out on his butt.
Well, you know, and it's not like Susan to be, she's not a meek, mild person. She speaks her mind. She is very frank. She doesn't have a whole lot of tact. And I think that it just snuck up on her so gradually she didn't realize how bad it had gotten.
And there's two things here that are working. First of all, Susan, very loving woman, and she took her marriage vows very seriously. And in the LDS faith, you're married for literally eternity. So you got to do everything you can to make it work. And secondly, it's like the boiling frog theory. You know, you put a frog in boiling water and he's going to jump out. You put him in normal water and slowly turn up that heat, he's not going to feel it. And before he knows it, he's boiled. And that's pretty much the theory here. Like you said,
yeah. And
just
I told her that. I told her that exact analogy.
Oh, you did?
Yes, I did.
True. Absolutely true. One final question.
You know, Tricia.
Here. Oh, yes.
Tricia, I just wanted to throw this in here, but we had a show a couple weeks ago about sociopaths, and I am hearing the description of a sociopath here like over and over and over. I mean, he's just, you know, cut and dry, no doubt about it.
Absolutely, yeah. In fact, Kiersey, I'm going to send you the link to that show, because when you hear it, you're going to hear Josh. It's a woman who is an expert on sociopaths and how they get into women's lives. And I think you'll find it very interesting. And it might the Cox family might be interested in hearing it too, because it really does help explain Josh, and it helps you understand him more and how to deal with him. So I'll send you that link. I have one final question, Kiersey, and I hope you can answer it. What about Josh's mother? I know she supports Susan, but I really haven't heard anything about her or from her. What can you tell us about her, and what do you know about what she thinks about all of this?
Her name is Carica Powell, and when she married Steve Powell, he was very active in the LDS Church, and I'm sure she thought that she was getting a great husband at the time, but he started to show his true colors soon after. And within a few years, he was totally turned against the church. He started trying to teach the kids to not go to church. He fought her on everything. I know that there was a ton of verbal and emotional abuse. By the time that Jennifer Graves turned 18, she's the oldest child. The youngest girl, Alina, was 7 at the time. They were in divorce proceedings because Terry Powell had all she could take. And I know that Steve dragged her through terrible court battles for years. He brought her back over and over on trumped-up charges and basically bankrupted her and put her out on the street because she could not keep up with the lawyers and the court costs. So finally, she was just totally beaten down in every way, and so she just said, okay, I'm done fighting. And so he got custody of the rest of the kids. But because Jennifer was old enough, she was 18, she was able to choose, and she went with her mom.
Mm-hmm.
And she got out, thank goodness. And now Terry lives with Jennifer and Kurt Graves here in Utah. And she's a very sweet lady. She's a very soft-spoken and kind and gentle. She loves Susan like a daughter, and this has hurt her terribly. But she's in a really awkward position because I think that she knows deep down probably what happened, but she can't believe that her son could do this.
Her son, yeah, that must be hard for another.
So on the one hand, she's just in agony that Susan's gone. On the other hand, she still wants to maintain a relationship with Josh and being able to talk to her grandchildren. So.
Understood.
She has chosen to stay out of the media, and she does not talk to anybody doing interviews with the media.
Well, Kiersey, I can't thank you enough for joining us today. We've been talking with Kiersey Hallowell, Susan Powell's best friend, and thank God you are there for Susan. And like I said earlier, you are her voice, and you have been there to protect her, and you will keep speaking out for Susan. And Web Sleuths will be here to help you in any way we can, Kiersey. And be sure and tell Jennifer Graves that we appreciate her being so brave. I'd like to have her on the show sometime, so I will try and contact her. And Kiersey, I'll send you that link about sociopaths. You're going to be thinking the whole time, this is Josh. And Kiersey, you have my number. You know where we are. Call us if you need anything, and give our love to the Cox family as well, okay?
All right. Thank you so much for all the great work you do on Web Sleuths.
Thank you, my dear. You take care. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.
Okay, we're going to switch gears now, and I am so excited and delighted. I feel I'm almost like a drooling groupie here because of our next guest. She is truly amazing. She is an investigative journalist, author, syndicated columnist, writer for Newsweek. She has a great article on the Daily Beast right now. Everybody, please welcome basically the goddess of all that is true crime, Diane Diamond. Diane, welcome to Web Sleuths Radio.
Good grief, I'm just blushing. Thank you so much. Wow.
Well, it's absolutely true. First, I didn't have a chance to look this up, and I want to get this out there. Tell us the titles of the books you've written.
Well, I wrote one about Michael Jackson, about my, almost 15 years in covering Michael Jackson's stories from the first break of the molestation story to after the criminal trial, and that's called Be Careful Who You Love, mm-hmm. Inside the Michael Jackson Case. And the last book I wrote was about the crazy White House gate crashers and the media frenzy that makes stories like that so seemingly important, and that's called Cirque du Soleil.
What does that mean?
Not Cirque du Soleil, Cirque du Soleil.
What does that mean?
Well, Salahis was the name of Tark and Mikhail Salahi, the so-called White
House. Oh, that's right.
Crashers.
That's right. That's their name. Okay,
so,
gotcha.
Just a little play on words there, Trish.
Oh, now let me ask you. I heard about this woman. Is she kidnapped? Didn't he come out and say his wife was kidnapped?
Oh, golly. Yes, he did.
Okay.
Tark Salahi announced to the world and to the FBI that somebody had kidnapped his wife. Well, the moment I heard that, I have to tell you, because I spent a lot of time with them researching the book, you know, practically living with them in their Virginia house. And I thought to myself, she wasn't kidnapped. She finally got up enough guts to leave that guy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what happened. She left that guy. And I had written about it in the book last year. Her former boyfriend, Neil Schon, who is the guitarist for the rock band Journey, that was one
that's
of the loves of her life, and that's who she wound up going to.
Oh, good. I've met Neil once before, not that he'd have a clue who I was, but he was a very, very nice guy. So, well, that's very interesting. Yeah, last I heard that her husband said she's kidnapped and I need the FBI, and I thought, oh, please, you know,
yeah,
nobody
too.
Should pay attention to this. That was a very, very bizarre case. I'll be honest, I haven't read that book, but now I'm going to, because that really shows how you can take a nothing story and turning it into national headlines.
I just tell you real quick, I have two pieces up on the Daily Beast about it, and I got the exclusive with Mikhail and Neil Schon, telling me how they really so deeply care for each other, and they've been waiting to be together for 15 years. Kind of a romantic little story.
That is, and to have, you know, somebody like him be your boyfriend, he's going to write songs, they're going to be on the radio. How romantic. Man, that never happens to me. I always get the guy with B.O. that doesn't know how to read. But anyway, go ahead.
Well, I'm lucky. I got a great husband of more than 20 years. So.
He's very lucky, too, let me tell you, my dear. We're talking with Diane Diamond. Diane, I don't know if you had a chance to listen to just a little bit. We had Kiersey Hallowell on. She is Susan Powell's dearest friend, and she's being an incredible friend to Susan. And do you know much about that case?
You know, I don't know too much. When I was doing the Casey Anthony trial in Florida, Jean Casares, who's an old dear friend of mine from our court TV days, and I were talking about that story because she is so aware of all of the ups and downs and ins and outs of that. And she said, you know, someday they're going to find that poor woman's body. So I don't know very much about it, but Jean sure does.
Yeah, it is a creepy, creepy case, and you're going to be hearing a lot more about it. Diane, we have a segment on Web Sleuths Radio called What the Heck Has Casey Anthony Done Now? And we say what the heck because I'm in Utah and we always say heck and flip instead of the usual words. And Casey, once again, is on the cover of People magazine. I stand and I read it while I'm in line with my groceries. I don't buy it. And
oh, I missed that one.
Oh, yeah, she's on the cover, and it's all about how she's scared that somebody's going to hurt her and how she's just supposedly starting to realize how damaging her lies are, and she's trying to understand what she has done, and they tried to paint her, and I'm not saying People magazine did this, but the people that they interviewed tried to paint her as a normal young woman who wants to go out and have fun, but she knows she can't go out anywhere because somebody will kill her. And that was basically the whole story there. You have written about Casey Anthony. What did you think about George and Cindy and that whole Dr. Phil thing?
Well, my first reaction to that People magazine story is boo, hoo, hoo.
Exactly.
I'm sorry you're afraid and you don't think anybody likes you. But, you know, that you reap what you sow. As my mother, I grew up in Albuquerque, New Mexico, not far from Utah. That's what she always said. If you reap what you sow, and that is what Casey Anthony is getting right now. Her parents, you know, I'm torn about it. I sat in court and I watched them at in the early stages before the trial began and at the trial, and I think her father is more seeped in reality than her mother. Her mother appears to me to be someone who has probably made excuses for her daughter her entire life because she's still doing it. She's still, well, you know, maybe she had a seizure or maybe she had a brain tumor or maybe your granddaughter died in your daughter's care. Get a clue. I mean, I am sympathetic to them. I'm the mother of a daughter myself, but I just, I was interested in them going on Dr. Phil, but in the end, I thought, no, why did they do that?
Mm-hmm.
Why did they do that? Some people would say for money. I don't think that was really their motivation. I think they were so in the spotlight for so long that they just finally said, you know, it's our turn to talk now.
Right.
So, I give them that, but that's Cindy Anthony. I swear, if Casey came back right now and said, hey, can I come move back home, she'd probably say yes. And George would probably say, I'm out of here.
Exactly. I think you're absolutely right. And that was one thing that was mentioned in People magazine is their source said that Casey was saying, you know, basically, Cindy needs to shut up. She needs to get out of the spotlight. It's not about her. It's about me. And I'm thinking, boy, those are, as somebody said in our chat room now, two peas in a pod. We have lots of people in a chat room. You can't see it, Diane, but a lot of people are welcoming you and telling me to tell you how much they love you and appreciate everything you do. Now, what's this? We're going to go back and talk a little bit about the trial because, believe it or not, people still want to talk about it. That's why she's on the cover of People magazine. That will sell so many copies and make People magazine a lot of money. So obviously people are still interested in Cindy Anthony. But there is one story that I have never gotten straight, and I'm hoping you can get it straight. What was this it's not a big deal. That texting thing going on in the courtroom, was Jose Baez texting a People magazine reporter and the judge got all mad? What happened?
Well, I noticed that I don't know who he was texting. You know, I'm always very careful before I say something definitive. And I don't know who Jose Baez was texting, but I did notice he was texting in the middle of a trial, in the middle of a death penalty trial, for goodness sake. Jose Baez is a very interesting character, I guess that's the best word to say.
Yes.
He, when I first came to town, I went down to cover the jury selection in Tampa. And he came over to me and kind of tried to bully me a little bit and say, you know, what are you doing here? Oh, I hear you're out to get my client. I hear, you're the big investigative reporter. And I just gave it right back to him.
I'd have smacked him, just backhanded him.
Well, you can't do that. And,
I know.
You know, still work. But anyway, I find that he is a, you know, he takes some sort of fighting, what do you call that? Taekwondo.
Oh, Taekwondo, yes.
Yeah, so he's a scrapper by nature. It took him 8 years to become a lawyer because he couldn't pass the bar exam and then get them to admit him because he had so much negative stuff in his background. But
I'm sorry, I don't mean to laugh.
I know. He's just a piece of work, and I was not surprised when he suddenly now, you know, he's out of the limelight. Now what can he do? He can go be the missing Aruba girl suspect attorney.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's very unorthodox. So I don't really know the story behind the People magazine thing, but
so,
I know Steve Helling, and I was sitting right behind Steve Helling. That's the People magazine guy. Mm-hmm. I didn't see him texting a lot. I was sitting right behind him.
Interesting. So do you think, in your opinion, Jose Baez is a good lawyer, or is he just a lucky lawyer?
I think he's a lucky lawyer.
I do, too. I think he's very lucky.
Yeah, I think he got lucky for a couple reasons. Number one, he got a sequestered jury that wanted to go home.
Mm-hmm.
He got a jury that only deliberated 11 hours, and a lot of that was meal breaks. It was a 4th of July weekend. They wanted to go home. And so grabbing on to that whole idea of, well, I have reasonable doubt. What about you? Yeah, I have doubt too. Yeah, okay, let's call it a day. I don't often talk negatively about jury decisions because,
mm-hmm.
you know, you never know.
Right.
If you're not in the courtroom every single second, you know, you can't really judge. But this one, I don't even think they deliberated long enough. I don't think they deliberated.
So you do think the jury got it wrong then? Based on the evidence, you think they could have found her guilty, or what do you think?
I always thought that the state had overcharged her.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't a death. I don't think it was a death penalty case. She's not, you know, Charlie Manson or Bundy or somebody who's going to go out and do a crime spree. If she ever got out. Mm-hmm. But having said that, when that jury did not find her guilty of negligence, child negligence,
right?
Not reporting the child missing for 31 days. If that's not negligence, I don't know. I'm living on the moon.
You're right. We're talking with Diane Diamond. And, Diane, I have a wonderful co-host, executive producer. I keep giving her titles instead of money. We call her Kimster. And Kimster has a couple of questions for you. Go ahead,
hey, Kim.
Kimster.
Hi.
Kim, how are you?
Great. Mr. Lucky wants to know, how come Dr. Phil didn't ask about Kaylee's father?
Well, you know, when you go into those kind of interviews, if you're a journalist – if you're a trained journalist, you say, okay, I'm going to come and interview you, but you got to let me ask whatever I want to ask. I mean, that's always a prerequisite. Dr. Phil is not a journalist, and that may have been an agreement on the side. Just please don't ask us who the father is because we don't really know. She lied to us so much, we have no idea. So that is why I think he didn't ask.
Right. He probably had to make that concession going in. I'm sure there were certain rules. Right,
yeah.
Exactly. Kimster, do you have another question?
Yes, I do.
Okay,
I have one from V. Legay. She wants to know, Diane, if you know, what you think about the Casey and Rich boyfriend story in Mexico.
Oh, you know, I think a lot of stuff is sold to tabloids, and they become convinced that it's real, or real enough that if they print it, they won't get sued by anybody.
Mm-hmm.
That's the dirty little secret. And then it gets out into the mainstream media, so to speak, or at least on the blogosphere, and it becomes fact. I don't believe anybody in their right mind would immediately take her as a girlfriend and cart her off to Mexico. It just didn't seem to ring true to me. You know, now maybe I'll be proven wrong, but it just, I read that. I took that with as big a grain of salt as when I heard Tark Salahi say his wife had been kidnapped.
There you go.
You have to really keep your common sense about this stuff. Some of the things that, you know, oh, she's in Ohio. Oh, she's in Mexico. Oh, she's staying, you know, in a ranch in California. You know.
Exactly.
First of all, who cares? But second,
amen.
You know, use your common sense. Would you be her boyfriend right now? I don't think so.
No, especially if you had a lot of money. You wouldn't be her boyfriend. Two questions here. Do you think Jose Baez will write a book? And do you think Casey Anthony is going to get pregnant soon? Just opinion questions.
Oh, the latter. I hope not. Me too. But I bet she does.
I bet she does, too.
Because that's what she does. Jose Baez, let me tell you about the state of the literary world right now, having been in it. They're not buying a lot of books right now. You have to be really, really notorious or have a really, really good track record of being a, you know, huge seller. I don't think he has a story yet, but having said that, because he just hasn't been a lawyer long enough, having said that, there's somebody somewhere who will pay him if he reveals enough about the backstory of Casey Anthony.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And is there a big backstory?
And is there a good lawyer in the world who would do that to their client? There shouldn't be, but he might be one.
Exactly. Okay, Diane, we need to get down to some dirt here, okay?
Oh,
we've been following this case for years, since day one, and it has been our biggest case on websleuths.com. I don't know if you're familiar with our website, but it is the largest true crime website out there and by far the one that is most trustworthy. We do not allow rumors. We don't allow people just come on and start accusing people of crimes. We have very strict rules, and we've been following this case forever. Cindy Anthony, I've spoken with her. She has been on Web Sleuths. You know, it's pretty popular forum, and we need to know. We've found out as much as we can find out. Give us some of the backstory. What happened at that trial that we didn't hear about that you know about?
At Casey Anthony?
Yes.
Oh, I think the biggest, I touched on it before, I think the biggest thing that happened was they sequestered that jury.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not for sequestering juries because then they feel like prisoners. And they feel isolated from their support systems, and I think that was a huge miscalculation. The judge kept it quiet enough that we didn't know it was Tampa until the very last moment, and, well, congratulations. But what did you gain from that? I think you gained a jury that just didn't get its duty. And now part of the reason, I think, is that judges in the United States, I saw it at the Michael Jackson case, I saw it here, they don't explain this idea of reasonable doubt well enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you have reasonable doubt, then you must acquit. And, you know, if the glove doesn't fit, you must acquit.
Mm-hmm.
Really, I wish they'd come up with a good, a well-worded explanation for jurors of reasonable doubt. I can tell you, Kim and Trish, that tomorrow the sun is not going to rise. Well, you may have a reasonable doubt. Gee, but is it a logical doubt? Does your common sense tell you that I might be right? Well, of course not. And so I think that's the thing, that's the dirty little secret that happened at the Casey Anthony trial. The jurors didn't get it. And the very fact that they didn't find her guilty of negligence, child negligence, after she kept her daughter's disappearance a secret. I almost say kept her daughter's body in the trunk, but I guess she was found not guilty of that. She kept her daughter's whereabouts a secret for a month. That's negligence in anybody's book. So
exactly. Common sense tells you that's negligence, for God's sakes, you know?
Okay, here's another little piece. There's a guy who I just adore. I will not name him, but I'll tell you he's with one of the major networks. And he's a freelancer out of Chicago. And his only job ever since that child was missing was to be on that story.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you it was NBC, okay?
Mm-hmm.
This guy's dedication to this story, I think, coupled with Nancy Grace's, is what kept this story alive. This producer for NBC is so good at what he does and so thorough that NBC and HLN are the reasons we all know about Casey Anthony. I guess I really have to give it first to Nancy because she's the one who dug in right away.
Yes, she
did. Whether you like her style or not.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a shame. I hear it all the time. How come we don't hear about the little black child missing from Detroit? I don't know. I'm sorry about that. I wish it wasn't like that. If Casey Anthony had been a different color and not so cute, we might not have heard of her either. But
I don't think we would have. But it's all about ratings. You're right, and you're absolutely right. Nancy's the one that kept it going, and the NBC producer. NBC did some incredible stories on Casey Anthony.
Yeah,
and you're absolutely right. That's why we're all interested. And I've always felt, if I can get on my soapbox here a little bit, and this is very unfortunate, that when a missing persons case happens, unless you have some sort of seedy characters surrounding it and unusual people in the family, unless you have some sort of side story going all around it, it's not going to get the attention it deserves in the media, and that's too bad. You know, Susan Powell, the missing Utah mom here that we were just talking about, her case didn't really kick up again until, her father-in-law came out and started lying about them having this sort of affair and this flirtation, and he's just a sick, twisted jerk. And unfortunately, that's the way it is a lot of times in these missing person cases. With Casey Anthony, you had all of this other stuff swirling around. You had the weird mom and the dad and the boyfriends and, you know, the body
the
wasn't in the trunk.
Contest.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You had all of this stuff that the media could report on, and that's what you jump on. And Nancy Grace wouldn't jump on it if we didn't watch it. I'm sure. In fact, I've looked. Her ratings went through the roof during the Casey Anthony trial.
Listen, Nancy was beating Bill O'Reilly during this trial. Okay. Now, Bill O'Reilly is the king of that time slot in
monster
the television world, but she was regularly beating him. So I think it's one reason CNN came late to the party. They were watching their sister network, HLN, and saying, oh my gosh, look at the ratings this story is getting.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you one other secret. Look, media outlets pay money. They'll tell you they don't pay for the interview, but they do because they cloak it in paying for a photograph or
mm-hmm.
paying for some video or paying for some documents or something. This trial, more than any other in recent history, unmasked this practice. There were people paying money, and I think NBC paid some money, a little bit of money, but ABC News paid, I think, a total of $225,000 to the Anthonys.
That's right. That's right.
You know what? I think some of that money, wait a minute. I think some of that money, yes, went to the meter reader, Kronk, Roy Kronk.
Roy Kronk, yes.
So $200,000 went to the Anthonys, much of which was paid, or some of which was paid to Jose Baez to pay him a little bit of money. And the rest went to the Anthonys to pay bills, or I don't know. I don't know what they did with it.
Mm-hmm.
This has changed the face of television network broadcasting. ABC no longer pays for anything. They won't. I mean, if they want to interview somebody in Texas, they'll fly them to New York to do the interview. But they don't pay any money for anything anymore.
Well, why did it change then? What changed? Why did that change because of the Anthony case? What happened?
Because they were unmasked.
Because we found out.
During the trial. Mm-hmm. This came out during the trial that the Anthonys, Cindy Anthony, had to answer questions about it.
Mm-hmm.
Roy Kronk had to answer questions about it. Well, you got $25,000 for what? Well, they said it wasn't for my interview, but they paid me for a picture of the dead snake I found in the area where the body was.
Yeah, that's just a way to get around it. That's all it is. You wouldn't
exactly.
pay that for a picture. That's stupid. Yeah, I see. So their dirty little secret was out, and now they don't do it at all. Well, that might hurt them because another network might do it, and then they'll lose all kinds of scoop, and then what do you want to bet? They'll come right back and start doing it again.
Well, that's my bet. That's my bet. But for right now, everybody is laying pretty low. I know there was some offers made recently on another very interesting case out of not San Diego, Coronado, California, and some items came for sale, and nobody will buy them. ABC,
really?
NBC, CBS. CBS has rarely paid anyway, but
mm-hmm.
yeah. So I think, you know, if there's one kind of positive change, I guess it's that. When I was with the television show Hard Copy years and years ago, they would pay similarly They would. I would never, yes. I told them, I don't want to be involved in any of these negotiations. You want to pay them something to come and do an interview with me or sell us their video, you know, send the lawyer in, and then I'll do the interview after that's all done.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a practice that's been going on for a long time, but I think you're going to see it curbed, especially because of the economy as well. Right
yes,
now.
Oh, that's true. We're talking with Diane Diamond. We all know Diane from her days at Court TV, the many books she's written. She is now writing for Newsweek, The Daily Beast. Totally amazing woman. If you want to know about true crime, Diane Diamond is definitely your woman. Now, Diane, you were there. Were you there every day of the trial or most days or...?
Not every day, no.
Okay.
I was there for Newsweek and The Daily Beast, and I went in early, and they just, you know, cost a lot to have somebody there.
Yes.
So I was glued to my internet stream every single day once I did come home. And, you know, there were days they would say, take the day off. I said, no, I'm stuck. I got to watch this.
Got to watch, exactly. Were you there?
I love being in a courtroom, so.
Oh, I can imagine. Were you there the very first day that Yuri Melich took the stand?
Yes, yes. And that was the day that Cindy walked in carrying Kaylee's teddy bear.
Yes, that was the day, and you may not know this, but that was the day when Baez got up and asked, so do you use any other names other than Dick Tracy or Lando? Do you remember that?
I do.
And what that was from was Yuri had come on to Web Sleuth, and he signed up under the name Dick Tracy Orlando, but he immediately told us who he was, and all he did was thank us for our kind comments. He had broken his leg, and people got together and had a well, you know, wishing him well. He just came on and said thank you. That was basically it. Never said a word about the case, nothing. And Jose Baez tried to use that against him. And I'll tell you, Diane, I was sitting here watching TV. You know, if Richard Simmons would have walked in with Arnold Schwarzenegger, I couldn't have been more surprised when I heard that because I knew what he was going to do, and thank goodness the judge didn't allow it. I love Judge Perry. But what did you think of Yuri? I'm biased. I love the guy. I think he's a great guy. Did you think he did a good job in this case?
Yes, I do. And I think he did a good job on the stand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are a lot of really good detectives who really can muck it up on the stand. Hello, Mark Furman. Anyway, but no, Yuri Melich, he's the cop you want to respond when you've got a really bad problem.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is a guy, he's a military-looking almost with his haircut and just a very good bearing. And what I noticed was, again, back to the scrappiness of Baez would try to needle him. And Yuri would just sit and listen and then say, well, here's my answer to that. And be very
mm-hmm.
calm. He wouldn't take the bait. He, again, is everything you want in a cop and, more importantly, a witness.
Yes,
he was on
I
the stand
agree.
Several times.
Mm-hmm.
Several times.
He was amazing.
You know, somebody took that nickname, Dick Tracy Orlando, and Twitter's under that name.
Oh, really? Oh, I didn't know
yes.
that. I don't think
yes.
it's him. I don't think it's him. I don't know who that would be.
No. I confronted the guy, you know, privately, and I said, "You can't really be." And he said, "No, I'm not. I just like the name." So somebody
yeah.
is twittering under that
name. Under that name. And I bet there are people that think that is Yuri. Well, it's not, thank goodness. Kimster, you have some questions from the chat room for Diane Diamond. Go ahead.
Yes, I do. This question was written by Lyra213, but I have the same question. What do you think about a cable show dedicated only to missing persons and hot trials?
Well, that would be the Nancy Grace show, I think. I fill in for
Nancy.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Often.
I said cable show, and I meant to say cable station. She wrote show, but we've all talked about a whole station.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, now you're tearing up my heart because that really was what Court TV was.
Yes.
Was Court TV presented in the way I would have done it? No. I thought it was a little too dry. I didn't think the production was always very smart. You know, they'd take you into a trial and they'd start a piece of tape and it'd be in the middle of a sentence or something. But
mm-hmm.
it had such potential, Court TV, and such a following. Oh, my gosh, we had such loyal, smart followers. thus, I mean, that was really, to me, demonstrative of the want and the need out there in America. People want to know what's going on in courts and how does it work and what's reasonable doubt and what's, you know, habeas corpus and what's all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And then somehow along the way, well, I'll tell you exactly, it was at the end of 2005, I got back from the Jackson trial, and they said, you know, we got to let you go. We're being sold. We've dismissed your investigative unit. I had a little unit. We've had to let everybody go because we're paring down. We're going to be sold to Time Warner.
Oh, no.
And
I remember that.
And, of course, what happened, they made it into True TV, which, you know, you still get in session during the day, so that's good. But I would love, I'd be the first one standing in line, knocking at the door, saying, can I work here?
Mm-hmm.
If there was a cable network. Yeah.
I think it'd be very popular, but I don't know why people won't jump on it. It's just very strange. It could be easy to put together. It wouldn't cost a lot of money.
Mm-mm.
And, boy,
one hammer
help.
In a courtroom oftentimes. I'll tell you my personal view is that Time Warner and a group called Liberty owned Court TV. Liberty wanted to sell its half, so Time Warner bought it. And I think somebody in Atlanta thought, well, you know, Court TV covers all those great trials that CNN is already covering. And so that's going to be, we're going to be competing with ourselves because
mm-hmm.
Time Warner owns CNN. They now own Court TV. And so I think they agreed to take Court TV, to rename it, put it in a different direction, because they thought, silly, I think, they thought it might be too much competition for its, you know, major network.
You know what I'd like to see? Somebody have the decency to say, okay, this is going to be the right thing. You know, we make $8 zillion on these other channels. We're going to dedicate a channel to missing people. We're not going to put a lot of money in it, but you can tune in, and you will see stories about current missing people because it's the right thing to do. I don't ever hear people doing things, big corporate people doing things because it's the right thing to do, and I would love to see that happen. Kimster, you have another question for Diane Diamond, right, from our chat room?
Yes, I do. We're going back to the Casey Anthony trial, and the question comes from Lyra again. Boy, Lyra, how much money did they pay JB for his? Jose Baez for his interviews early on?
Oh, I don't think he got paid anything. Honestly,
mm-hmm.
I don't think a lawyer ethically can say, I'm representing someone right now and you need to pay me before I come into an interview. Having said that, I don't remember exactly where he gave all these interviews, but I sure know that Jose Baez loves to come to New York. And
I bet.
So
he
if,
gets free
if,
trips there, right?
Oh, first class,
mm-hmm.
best hotels, maybe show tickets, maybe, you know, fancy dinners. So, you know, that's where the payment comes, and it comes mostly in the huge amount of public relations. That's why these lawyers take these pro bono cases. You know, he got, I think I'm remembering, about $90,000 from the ABC payment to the Anthonys. $90,000. He worked 3 years on that case.
Yeah,
so, you know, whether you like him or not, that's not a lot of money.
Right.
So, you know, when people wanted to talk to him, bring me to New York. That's a sort of payment. Put me on national television. That's a huge payment. There's probably very few people in America that don't know who Jose Baez is right now.
Boy, that is the absolute truth. Let me ask you a question about Jeff Ashton. He retired. He was the prosecutor of the Casey Anthony case. Retired, wrote a book. It's out in November. What do you think of that?
I have already pre-ordered it.
Have you? I think everybody has, too. I mean, I want to read it.
Well,
I don't have a
would love to
really
have been
don't.
His co-author on it or his, you know, ghostwriter or whatever on it.
Right.
You sit in so many courtrooms and you kind of sometimes, I have to admit, you kind of doze off a little bit because one of the lawyers is kind of boring. But every once in a while, you run into a lawyer who is just, when he's on, you sit up straight in the chair and you go, God,
yes.
What's he going to say now? And that's Jeff Ashton. He was so good. He had one problem. He let his emotion show on his face. Mm-hmm. And that's not always good, and it came back to bite him in the you-know-what, not in the face,
right.
During that trial. But I thought he was very, very, very good and very effective in the courtroom. Apparently the jury did not agree. I think, though, you're asking me, should he be writing a book?
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was set to retire when this case came up. He was already going to be gone.
Mm-hmm.
And they asked him if he wouldn't stay on just to complete this case. And so he did. So, I'm assuming that his entire book is going to be focused on the Casey Anthony trial.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what he has to say is very valuable because he'll bring his whole 30 years of experience
yes.
to telling you what went right with that trial and what went wrong with that trial.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm you know, a First Amendment person. I think the more information we have out there, the better. So I'm not for saying, oh, he shouldn't write a book.
Mm-hmm.
I think he should write a book so that everybody who's interested enough, there's no more court TV. This is a way to learn how the justice system works and doesn't work.
Exactly. And since he is not working for the prosecutor's office anymore, he can be brutally honest and not have to worry about losing his job. That's what I think is going to make his book really stand out. He's going to be able to say things that normally he couldn't say if he was still working for them.
I hope he does. They didn't get enough money, or if they didn't get enough support, or if they, you know, there's something. I hope he points out the flaws in the system, because come on, it's not perfect.
Yeah, boy, that's the truth. Hey, you are covering a big case now. It's the Michael Jackson case. The doctor has been charged with his death. Why don't you update us on that? Tell us what's going on.
Well, it's the Dr. Conrad Murray case,
that's
actually.
Yes.
Everybody is like, are you on the Michael Jackson case? It's like, he's dead
now. He's dead. I know
so,
that. I just call it Michael Jackson case. Dr. Conrad Murray, you're absolutely right.
No, I know exactly what you meant. Okay, let's see. It starts on Tuesday. The jury
mm-hmm.
has been picked, 7 men, 5 women. One of them admits that they even met Michael Jackson one time.
Maybe
and
that.
Other than that, we don't know a lot about this jury. They picked the jury in record time. The judge, you know, it is the judge's playground. Michael Pastor is his name. And he said you can give them a whole bunch of questions on a questionnaire, but you're going to get about a minute to ask them questions in person, and
mm-hmm.
they sat the jury already. It was record-breaking time. I think Dr. Murray's team has a real tough road ahead. I have
mm-hmm.
a piece coming out overnight on the Daily Beast about this. I think they got some bad breaks from this judge. The judge
mm-hmm.
is not allowing certain witnesses and certain testimony, which we can talk about if you want, but I'm going to be real surprised if he is completely acquitted.
Really, you think that it's kind of leaning towards he's going to be found guilty of something? What are the charges?
Well, of
and
course,
what
I thought that Casey Anthony's trial.
Well,
too,
that's
so
true.
Don't quote me.
What is the least charge he could be found guilty of?
Well, it's manslaughter. It's involuntary
mm-hmm.
manslaughter, and you know you think, oh gosh, he's going to get 10 or 20 years. Well, the maximum is 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
So when you do 4 years, I have a friend who went in for a similar stint for tax evasion, stupid guy, but he's already getting out. So when you're in for 4 years, you don't really serve 4 years.
That's not Mickey Sherman, is it?
Yeah, it is.
I knew it. Well, he's talked about it. He said, you know, I was stupid. I can't believe I did this. He admitted it.
I know. I love him to pieces. He's actually, here's a break on that. Actually, he's out now and at a halfway house.
Oh,
he got out on Thursday.
I'm gonna call him and have him on the show because he's delightful. I mean, whether you like what he does or not, he's just a delightful guy. He really is.
Yeah, I do. And his soon-to-be ex-wife, Lee Sweel, is a friend of mine, and I love them to pieces, but sometimes your friends make mistakes.
Well, everybody makes mistakes. So we have to get back to the Casey Anthony trial. We have another question here from Lexi. Are the jurors' names going to be released in October? Is that what we've been hearing?
I don't know. In the state of Florida, you're supposed to be able to know everything.
Mm-hmm.
But as we all know, Judge Perry said, no, these people are in danger, and I'm not going to let that happen right now.
Mm-hmm.
So in October, he may get another petition from somebody. I really like Judge Perry.
I thought he was a
really thoughtful jurist.
Anyway,
he may again get a petition from somebody saying, please, please, I'm already in danger here in my community. I don't have enough money to move. Please don't put out my name. And he may extend that ban. Mm-hmm.
So we don't. That's not a given yet that the names are going to be coming out in the Casey Anthony trial.
I don't think so.
Okay.
No, not at all. It could happen, but mm-hmm. I think it could also not happen.
Now, Diane, are you working on another book that we should know about that we can look forward to?
Well, I'd like to be. Let me put it that way. Again, we're back to the state of publishing in this country with all the e-books and all that. I recently wrote a piece that took me a long, long time to investigate, and it's up on the Daily Beast right now. It's called The Real Grifters of Beverly Hills.
Mm-hmm.
And it was about the Housewives of Beverly Hills, the fellow who allegedly committed suicide.
Yes.
I say allegedly because I'm not convinced of that.
Really? Now that's interesting. Okay.
Yeah, he had cheated many, many people, and I know of one in particular out of Chicago with kind of a bent-looking nose who wasn't too
mm-hmm.
happy with him. But that's not in the story. What is in the story is about how Taylor Armstrong and her husband, Russell, really, my words, were con people. They were a con couple. They
mm-hmm.
were, you know, like the Bonnie and Clyde of Beverly Hills, except they didn't kill anybody. They just were full of investment cons.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not convinced. She was on Entertainment Tonight last week, a place where I work occasionally, saying, you know, poor me, I'm broke. And
I saw that, yeah.
I don't think so. I just don't mm-hmm. think so. I have checks written by her to offshore accounts. So there's money somewhere, okay?
Mm-hmm.
She said there isn't any for her. Maybe she's right, but I'm not convinced. And all this is a long answer to your question. I'd like to write a book about reality television.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of people are attracted to it? Can you say narcissistic?
Oh, yes.
What kind of people produce it? Can you mm-hmm. say greedy?
Mm-hmm.
What kind of people watch it? Can you say lonely or unfulfilled?
Mm-hmm.
And what's it doing to our society? You know, there are groups of young people now. There's a chapter in my book, Cirque du Salahi, that talks about this, but just a little chapter. And I quote Dr. Keith Ablow in it saying, there's a whole group of young people now who think life is all about being outrageous. And
mm-hmm.
if I can be as outrageous as Snooki, I can get a TV show. Hey, look
right.
at me be outrageous. And I think that reality TV is really redefining American values and societies and entertainment and ethics. And I'd really like to write a book about that.
Well, I think you should. I don't have the money to give you to do it, but if I did, I would.
Oh,
I think that would be fascinating.
I was thinking maybe you would put some money on the table and
I'll
do it.
I'll work it out. I'll get back with you on that. I'll get you a couple of bucks here and there. Well, I think you're absolutely right, though. I think it is a detriment to our society because people think that's how you're supposed to act. And people in real life situations don't do that stuff. It's so frustrating to watch.
Right. And again, I'm back to that whole First Amendment thing. I don't want to tell people what they can and cannot put on TV. But I
mm-hmm.
do want to say, hey, really? Really? This is what you want to watch? This is what you want your kids to watch?
Mm-hmm.
This is okay with you? And I think if people really realize what happens to some of these folks who try out or get on and then get kicked off,
yes.
sometimes their lives are just they're never normal again. They're never
the
same.
Yeah, it can really destroy you.
Yeah, the Salahis are a very good example of that. And so are the Taylor Armstrong folks
mm-hmm.
because their lives were falling apart. The Salahis, when I was with them researching the book down in Virginia, every day they were waiting for their house to be evicted from their house. Their phones had been cut off. They're
mm-hmm.
waiting for their next big television break, which wasn't going to come.
Right.
And, you know, they're busy talking to me thinking the book is going to make them famous. Well, of course, that's not the way the real life works. So
exactly. Well, they've got this skewed vision of their life, and it is not reality, even though it's called reality TV. It should be called far from reality TV.
There you go.
Know?
I like that.
No, that's absolutely the truth. So you can use that as your title if you'd like. Far from reality TV. Well, Diane, we need to wrap it up here. I just am so delighted that you came on the show, Diane Diamond. Tell us your next thing is you're going to be in Los Angeles for the Conrad Murray trial, correct? And you have that go ahead.
I'm going to try to get there, but I have a piece overnight that'll go up on the dailybeast.com.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know. I never know what they're going to entitle it, but it'll be something about Conrad Murray. It's what the jury won't be hearing.
Oh,
so,
very interesting.
You know, I do that, work on another book, maybe do another investigation. I got my eye on a story out of Maine I like right now, but I can't tell you about that yet.
Oh, no, that's not fair. Okay.
If I told you, I'd have to kill you.
Well, listen, I will link to the Daily Beast from websleuths.com so people can read your new article and the one about the Real Housewife of Beverly Hills and the quote-unquote suicide. Maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. Diane Diamond, what can I say? You, like I said earlier, you are the goddess of true crime. In addition to being an investigative journalist, author, syndicated columnist, I can never say that, and writer for Newsweek and the Daily Beast. Will you come on Web Sleuths Radio again, pretty please?
You betcha. We have a mutual friend in Colorado who says that I should have been doing this more often.
Tell Carol hi. I love Carol. She's gonna be on my show soon. She doesn't know it yet, but she is. So thank you, Diane. You take care.
You bet.
And, we'll be in touch again, okay?
Have a great week ahead, everybody. Bye-bye.
Hey, take care, Diane.
Thank you, Diane.
Okay, kids, that wraps it up for Web Sleuths Radio. But wait, don't leave just yet. I have a few things I need to tell you, okay? We need to talk about the poll from last week. Do you remember the Web Sleuths poll from last week? Do you believe Rebecca Zahow was killed, committed suicide, or you don't know? She is the young woman in Malibu that was found with her hands behind her back, hanging. Very strange case. We had Dr. Cyril Wetz on the show talking about it last week. And the results of the Web Sleuths poll, 80.31% said Rebecca was murdered, 8.50% said suicide, and 11.19% don't know. Now, I've been trying to get Rebecca's family attorney, Ann Bremner, on the show, but no luck, but I'll keep harassing her, hounding her until she serves me with a do not annoy order or something to that effect. And I've actually connected with Rebecca's ex-husband, who seems to be a very, very nice man. And as to be expected, the family is having an extremely hard time here. So we'll definitely will be keeping up on Rebecca's case as well. This week's poll, it is a good one. You've got to go to the poll forum. And even if you are not a member of Web Sleuths, you can still participate in this poll. And here is the question. Is Susan Powell's father-in-law, Stephen Powell, involved in her disappearance? Your choices are, yes, Stephen is directly involved in the disappearance of Susan. No, Stephen is not directly involved, but he knows what happened. No, Stephen is not involved and not sure. Once again, that's at websleuths.com/forums, and just kind of scroll down, you'll find the polls form right there for you. Web Sleuths Radio is brought to you by a wonderful organization called Dreamcatchers for AbusedChildren.com, a nonprofit organization where their mission is to educate the public on child abuse symptoms, interventions, and preventions. Visit them at Dreamcatchers for AbusedChildren.com. And one final thing, my darling friends, please, when you go to WebSleuths.com, look at our cold cases. Even if you post a post that says, "I'm thinking of you," that can just heal the heart of a family member who is reading. Many times, the family and friends of missing people will Google the missing person's name, and that leads them to Web Sleuths. So please take a look at our missing forum and our cold case forum, and just post a message of hope or just post that you're thinking of them. That will really help somebody, and it's such a simple thing that you can do, and I know you can do it. Thanks again to Kimster and to our guests tonight, Diane Diamond, Ben Winslow from Fox 13 locally here in Salt Lake City, Kiersey Hellowell, Susan Powell's friend, and to you everybody for listening. Thank you so much. We'll see you on Web Sleuths, and it's Web Sleuths Radio, where we discuss true crime, current events, and we always do it with common sense. Good night.